Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 445 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. And this episode is our, as Bill just put it, get out of jail free card. It's our last recording of the year. It's an open roundtable with the hosts of the show and with anybody who is a listener or just anybody off the street who happens to have a way to connect to Discord and wanted to jump in and say anything at all. We're going to go ahead and let them do that to whatever extent is allowed by law. So anyway, let's go ahead and get into it. We'll start with the hosts. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
And we do have plenty of folks who joined us tonight. We have Ted. I'm going to announce him because he said he's a in listen-only mode, does not want to contribute anything. But he is an open-source contributor. So we should mention that. I know we have mentioned it on past shows, but we should definitely mention it now. He does the TW apps like TWCW, TWPSK, all those ones that start with TW and are done with the, what does he use, Fastlight? Is that, I don't remember. He'll tell me in the chat.
Yeah, I don't think it's Fastlight.
No, it's not Fastlight because that's FLDG and all that stuff, but I can't remember.
TK, isn't it? It's all TK?
Is it all TK? Yeah, okay. Yeah, TW does TK.
Smells of TK.
Max of TK, right. But yeah, lots of apps out there in the Debian repos, and I assume Fedora repos as well, for Ted's different apps that you can use for doing PSK31, Morse code, and so many other things. So let's see if we can run down the list here. I'm just going to run down in alphabetical order according to the thing here, and if you have anything to say other than hi, feel free to, but let's see who we have tonight with us. We have Cubicle Nate.
So greetings. I thought I'd be here for the final show of the year because I am a listener, although I lurk mostly on the channel.
Well, that's okay. Lurking is definitely allowed. And yes, if there are large gaps, that's all right. They will come out in post. Audacity has a great feature called Truncate Silence, which takes care of all of that. And there may be some of that due to the fact that we've forced everybody into push-to-talk mode, just so we're not all screaming at each other, unless everybody pushes push to talk at the same time, in which case all bets are off. But anyway, let's move on. We have Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB, who strangely decided to join us and give us the pleasure of his company tonight. I'm not sure why he's stooping so low, but welcome, Joe.
Well, thank you. I think it was Cheryl who sent me a note wanting to know if I'd be a part of this. And so I am very honored to be on this long-lasting podcast. For those that don't know it, I'm the kit-building editor of CQ Magazine and have been doing the monthly column in CQ on kit-building for over 12 years. And since the 2014 issue of the ARL Handbook, I am now the contributing author to the Construction Techniques chapter, rewriting that every year. So things keep me busy, and I love going out and giving talks about kit building, and I teach people how to solder and do hands-on kit builds as well.
Well, fantastic. Thank you for being here tonight and being a part of whatever chaos ensues from this point. I think Richard would be really happy to know that you are here tonight. I'm just kind of actually wondering where Richard is. Seems like if anybody would be here tonight, it would be him, unless he has, you know, something going on. Or we just irritated him to the point that he doesn't want to associate with us anymore. I don't know. Could be either.
That could be.
Next on the list, we have Tony K4XSS, longtime listener who used to listen to us out in California, now listens to us from his home state of Alabama. What's going on tonight, Tony? He might have an incorrect audio device because I see him like open all the time. We still can't hear him.
he's lurking. He's lurking in stuck on chat mode or something. I don't know.
Maybe he stepped outside for a cigar. Who knows? Well, we'll come back to Tony or he'll come back to us at some point. But anyway, moving on, we can skip past me because I've already introduced myself. And we have another longtime listener and longtime friend of the show and a benefactor of our show who's stuffed us full of much fine Cajun food over the years. We have a K9 KJN Hutch, who is, as he said before, in lovely Christmas light lit downtown Gosport, Indiana. How's it going, Hutch?
Hey, Russ. Hey, everyone. I'm doing great here in beautiful downtown Gosport. It's me and my dog and Christmas tree light and free Wi-Fi here. I'm 5 miles from the house, and it's the closest place I can actually get actual Wi-Fi.
Well, considering that you're remote, assuming using a cell phone or something, it sounds pretty good. So Gosport is doing you well tonight.
Yeah, I'm on my cell phone, and I've got, I guess, I don't know if I'm coming through my phone or through my earbuds. I'm not sure, but you sound great on this end.
Well, fantastic. Either way, it's working really good, and it's good to hear from you. It's been a while. I know Cheryl's been in touch over the last few months, unfortunately, with the whole situation over in Ohio with, you know, the Ham Fest that isn't happening. We'll hope it happens next year. We haven't had a chance to get out there and enjoy the fine luxury food over in downtown Mooresville, but, you know, maybe someday again. Anyway, let's move on. We have Scott and 8VSI, who's over in, Cincinnati, right? That's where you hail from nowadays?
Yep, absolutely. Cincinnati, Ohio, and about 3 miles away from Kings Island, where I wish I could get an antenna up on that, on the tower up there, but unfortunately they said no. I actually asked.
Well, nothing lost, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? I
mean, no, absolutely.
Yeah, the worst they could do is say no, which they did.
They did.
Fair enough. Anyway, we also have one more chat partner with us tonight. We have John W5AJQ, and I shouldn't shorten your name because you put Jonathan in there, so you might prefer that. So let's go with Jonathan W5AJQ. How's it going?
It's going great, and you can call me anything but late for dinner. Here in Salt Lake City, in, you know, a foot and a half of snow, I've been a listener of you guys here for maybe 6 months or so, but decided to get on the Discord and actually, you know, hang out with you guys a little bit. So glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Fantastic. Good to have you. And I have only been in Utah one time, and it was at the airport there in Salt Lake for about 30 minutes. So that is the entirety of my experience with Utah. So maybe one of these days we'll get out there. I'd like to see some of the desert areas, some of the monuments and the, you know, the mesas and all the cool stuff that's out there. But just not a lot of time spent in Utah. But it's a pretty state from what I've seen.
Yes, that it is. And I highly recommend coming for a visit.
Well, next time we go visit Bill, which will actually be the first time, we may actually pass through Utah on the way up there to Montana, because it's not on the way, but you know what, we could make it on the way, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
and hit Wyoming too, because I hear there's a lot of nothing over there. It kind of sounds like downtown Gosport, Indiana, actually. I think if you expand that to the size of Wyoming, I think you have a good description of it.
Oh my, that's so scary.
All right, so as is probably evident, we have no syllabus tonight. We have no rules, so we're just gonna, I don't know what we're gonna do. Do we even have any topics we want to hit? Is there anything we want to cover? Because I didn't even look to see if anybody bothered to put anything in the etherpad, which I'm going to assume that we didn't.
I just put some really bland topics, but let's say see if Tony's got his voice thing figured out. Tony, can you speak now?
I could speak before, but I don't know what worked there, but it's back now.
All right, well, go ahead and introduce yourself. There's K4XSS Tony.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Tony here, Huntsville, Alabama, previously California for a couple of years, but back home now.
And what was that call sign that I first contacted you with before you switched over to the X-ray Sierra Sierra?
KM4HSD.
That's it. KM4HSD. not that that means anything to anyone. You used to have a claim to fame because you used to be in a very rare grid square, and now you're back in Huntsville, Alabama, so nobody cares.
Yeah, pretty much. Once you leave Delta Mike 02, doesn't really matter anymore.
Well, we're glad you're here with us tonight. Are you getting the colder weather? Yesterday I was talking to Bill, and we were like supposed to have all these massive storms come through, and apparently they did rip through parts of Iowa and Nebraska. So Joe probably got a little bit of that. But the part that was dipping down here that was supposed to give us the super high winds and basically tear everything apart and give us all the warnings and everything basically does what it always does. It disappeared before it got here. So we barely even got rain. So Joe, did you get hit with that storm that blew through yesterday?
Oh, definitely. In fact, on the Weather Channel, they keep repeating a state patrol video from the interstate about 3 miles north of my house where it blew over a semi right in front of him. And we had peak gust at the airport of 93. I measured close to 50 miles an hour at my house. And the antenna survived, but mostly because the ones that have wires that went too close to tree branches, I untied them and just let them fall on the ground. And so everything survived and everything seems to be working. And as far as topics go, I'm always here to talk about kit building.
Well, you know what? Kit building is something we never talk about. So if you have something specific you'd like to touch on as far as kit building, I don't necessarily want to do an episode on kit building. That's something we can hold for 2022. But if there's a topic you want to address, by all means, give it to us.
Okay, very good. And also, I do 3D printing, and 3D printing is a lot of fun. And I've been able to make a lot of things that are good for amateur radio, such as cases for kits and dipole insulators and knobs and all sorts of things.
Yep, absolutely. Tony has been into 3D printing as well as myself. We have two 3D printers now, and we definitely do things with those. And a couple of the kits that we bought, we were setting up, I think it was last year or maybe the year before, we were setting up All-Star nodes for doing all the All-Star stuff and linking it through Echolink and all that stuff. And the nodes that come from, I think the call sign is N8AR. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. But there's like a Sherry and a Brian and stuff like that, pre-made All-Star nodes. And all of those have 3D printed parts when you order them. So it's kind of neat to see how those were being fit together for some open source hardware kits.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's a couple of cases for older four-state QRP kits that have been that had the STL files uploaded to Thingiverse. And makes it a lot easier, and I'm working on some cases myself. But as to Linux, my favorite thing has been to take Toughbooks and put Linux on them and extend their life because they are wonderful for field day logging.
Well, apparently you and Tony are kindred spirits because he uses Toughbooks a lot as well. And he, as I recall, was printing creating a 3D printed model of a mount for an IC7100. I don't know if you actually finished that, Tony, or where are you in that project?
I made two or three iterations of it, still working on it.
Are you using Fusion to build it?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, you know, you should have had that knocked out by now. I think you've been working on it for like 8 months.
Okay, 9, 10, maybe.
You've done all that work to that van, you know, to get it to be your sort of mobile command station, and you can't print a single mount for your radio?
Well, I'm still working on some mount for some lights. So that's made about 9 iterations of that. So that's kind of more important initially.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, but 3D printing is a lot of fun. I've been having a little bit of trouble. We bought one 3-color printer, has 3 different extruders into a single head, and we've been having some issues with getting that one to print right. But we might be looking at going a different route. I think I might just settle on a 2-color instead of a 3-color because the 3-color one doesn't really do 3-color. It sort of does, but it sort of doesn't. And I honestly think if you're just going to be doing, I mean, 2 colors is pretty much enough for most projects. But I don't know. The first one we bought, the Creality, that thing has been super rock solid and has done everything we've asked it to do. And yes, it's a whole lot of fun to see your project sort of to come to life right in front of you, especially if you're running like Octopi, which I am, and I know Tony is as well, or some of the other software that does the automatic stop frame time lapse, and get to see how those projects just sort of create themselves while you're asleep, because a lot of them can take more than a day. But Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, the printer I'm using is the Creality Ender 3 Pro, and I ran the heck out of it last year making the visors for clear plastic face shields for our first responders when they couldn't get those. I made over 300 of them. And so in so doing, I discovered that I wore out about every part there is in the printer, including the extruder and the heated bed and the belts and stuff. And being that I fix printers for a living, 3D printers was kind of a new adventure, but a lot of things are similar. And so it let me learn really quick, kind of under fire, how to replace parts on a 3D printer. And YouTube is your friend, especially when you have a printer like that that has such a large installed base that there's a lot of help out there.
Yep. Tony's using the 3 Pro as well. We're using the 3 Max, which is similar, just has a larger bed and a taller Z axis. But they work all the same, of course. So, yeah, this has been a lot of fun, kind of a learning curve. It's to me, I realized when working on the other printer how it's such a great combination of high technology and Stone Age technology at the same time, because like the extruder head is basically just a thing that gets hot and you push plastic through it. But then you have all the other electronics that deal with controlling the steppers and all that stuff. So it's a lot of high tech and low tech sort of mashed together to create these printers.
Yeah, they're really an interesting study in technology. And as to my Linux background, I actually learned how to use Unix through Solaris. I used to be an SSE with Sun as part of a contract for the company I worked for. So I did desktop and server maintenance. And so I learned Solaris, and in so doing, I learned all about Unix and then Linux. And so that's kind of where I got my background. Most people started, you know, either right in Linux or with the older Unix versions. But I started with Solaris, of all things.
Oh, I used Solaris in my day. Actually, one of the first things I started with was Xenix. That was one of the first ones I used. I also used SCO Unix, which I know somebody just caught fire for me saying that. But it was a thing at once upon a time, and it was Unix, and I actually use Unixware as well. And if you're still into Solaris, you know, what do they call Open Indiana now? It has a new name, right? But it's still a thing.
Yeah, isn't it still Open Indiana? Or
is it still Open Indiana? I thought we talked about them changing it to something else, but...
Yeah, it might be.
But Solaris is not quite dead. Yeah. You know, kind of like in the, you know, in the Monty Python film, and not dead. Yeah, that's kind of where Open Indiana is right now.
I think it's feeling better.
It might be feeling a little better. I don't know. It's getting some play. And Don showed up, KB2YSI. He has not unmuted yet. And for his benefit, if he does not already know, this is a push-to-talk channel, and you have to set up your PTT in your settings before you can talk, if you choose to. But Don KB2YSI has joined the group, so long-time listener, thanks for coming, Don. Oh, he's not muted anymore. Let's see what happens.
Good evening, everyone.
There we go. Hey, Don, how's it going?
It is going, late as usual.
I know, we're strangely early. It's a bad time to be late. All right. So that was cool. 3D printing. So let's see. Let me throw it out to see if anybody has anything they want to touch on, any kind of topic, whether open source or amateur radio or even anything else. And while we're doing that, we'll have Bill queue up whatever his first bland nondescript topic was in case we have to go that route. So
queue it up.
I've been hearing a lot about this this M17 project. And I just started checking into it, and I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts on it.
Well, we did a big episode on it. Someone can look up what episode that was. But if you've not listened to that, I definitely recommend it. If you have, then fantastic. The M17 project is neat. I mean, it's another software voice codec. It's based on Codec 2, but they're also working on a hardware component. I see in their dev chats all the time that they're working on, you know, getting these microcontrollers and transistors and everything in these radios to work. They've started with the TYT platform and the sort of knockoffs of the TYT platform to actually create radios that will transmit and receive using native M17, which they have done to a certain extent, but it's certainly still in development phase. It sounds really interesting. I know they got a grant from ARDC to work on that and to create their own hardware. So it's a project that is definitely moving forward. Wojciech, who's like the leader of the project, is really gung-ho about M17. They want it to become the de facto standard in digital voice communication. I don't know that it's actually ever going to get there, but I think it's a cool thing. Who else wants to chime in on M17?
I'll chime in real quick. It was episode 396. Open Indiana still exists, and you said something about Sherry Walgo, and that is correct. So,
what, N8AR?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, M17 is actually going to have a booth at the, I think it's at Orlando Hamcation.
Yep, they had a booth at NearFest up in Deerfield, New Hampshire, which I missed because our timing was off because they were in New Hampshire a month ago and I was there 2 weeks ago. But that was unfortunate. But yeah, some of the people who work on that project are actually from where I'm from. So I have good conversations with them, like Steve, KC1AWV. He's actually from Dover, New Hampshire, which is about 10 miles from where I grew up. So that's been cool. I mean, they're really, really working hard on that project, both software and hardware wise. So, the Linux in the Ham Shack and the Associated Club, which if you didn't know there was an Associated Club, there is. It's the Open Source Amateur Radio Club, or OSARC, OSARC. We have a call sign, Alpha Foxtrot Zero Sierra Sierra. There's a website for that. And it is operating an M17 reflector, which you can find at m17.af0ss.org. So if you want to try out M17, you can do it using DudeStar or DMR, something that will cross-link into it. And you can hit our reflector, which is... what do they go M17 dash and ours is 659. So if you want to try out some M17 and see how the protocol works, you have to get into it a different way. You can't really get into it with native M17 yet unless you're using DudeStar, but of course that's just an app on your phone or your PC. But you can use it until there's some actual production hardware.
And it's DroidStar now, as we learned.
That's right, yes. They've merged the two projects together and dropped DudeStar entirely. So DroidStar covers all aspects of the project, whether it's mobile or PC-based.
And it's very cool.
It is very cool. They're still working on the DStar thing, but DStar is a sort of a beast on its own, and it's archaic. And anyway, M17 is the way forward, right? So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
So did we hit anything that was interesting there, Jonathan, or did you have any further input on that?
Yeah, no, that's great. I'll tell you, I'm a big proponent of open source everything. I don't like closed systems and just aggravate you. So I'm eagerly watching this M17. Unfortunately, my engineering talents lie in the physical properties of metal and not the computing or RF arts, so I'm not very much good to this, but I'm sure watching it.
All right, very good. And we did do in the past, I think it was two episodes with Dave from Codec 2, which is a good introduction to where M17 sort of came from. I know we did at least one. I can't remember if we did a follow-up, but I think we did. And those episodes are getting long in the tooth now, but if you want to see sort of where the history of M17 is, then you should definitely check that out. You can just search for Codec 2 on the website and you'll come up with those. So
Yeah, episode 242 and episode 85. So, yeah.
Yeah, 85.
Really, really, really old.
From 2012. That was back in the day.
But yeah, we haven't talked to him since 2018. So it's been a while.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no worries. Glad you brought it up. Thank you very much. And Scott says, oh my God, I have so much to catch up on. Well, it depends on whether you've been listening or not. I mean, if you're caught up to episode 444, then no, you don't. You're already there.
Yeah, not so much. I find that learning, you know, working at home, I lose my my podcast time. So it's become a little bit more difficult to keep up with a lot of the podcasts I want to follow.
Yep, I understand that because I don't follow any, even my own.
I shouldn't think you have to there, but okay.
You'd be surprised how fast the knowledge goes out of your head.
Oh no, I found that out real quick. So
all right, well, Bill's got that topic queued up, and if we don't want to have to go down the route of like straightforward and boring, we definitely welcome other input. If anybody has any questions about projects or even about the show, anything you've like ever wanted to ask the hosts of Linux in the Ham Shack, you know, we're all right here. I usually regret saying that, but who knows? We'll see. As long as it's not too personal, it's fine. But anything else they want to touch on?
Well, my question would be, as kind of a newcomer to the podcast, is what is the best distro out there right now for pre-installed amateur radio?
It's not like we've never heard that question before. But, well, do we want to recommend our own?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say there's several good starting points. If you want one with all the software sort of pre-baked in so you can try things out, they might not necessarily have the latest versions of everything, but we offer a distribution based on... I think I have Mate and XFCE. They're both Ubuntu builds, and they're pretty comprehensive. And they don't come with a really ugly UI. And I only say that because the next ones I talk about will have a little bit uglier UIs because they're using LXQt and stuff like that. Andy's Linux comes with a bunch of stuff already pre-installed. Geez, there's also. If you're doing Trap Raspberry Box. Pi stuff, there's the Jason's project with KM4ACK's Build a Pi. Yep, there it is.
Build a Pi. Yep, there's Shackbox. There's that one that's
the one I wouldn't mention, which I'm not going to mention.
Yeah, and there's that one that's for like SDR use.
Oh yeah, Dragon Linux.
Dragon Linux.
Yeah. Dragon something. Dragon
something. Yeah.
Dragon, yeah, something like that. There is one that has just a bunch of SDR stuff, which, of course, is always cool because some of the SDR stuff is a little hard to actually compile on some boxes. I mean, if you're looking for a system that you can start off with and have little to no problems getting software installed, you know, and you want something that's updated more frequently than, let's say, an Ubuntu LTS, which is... Again, slightly long in the tooth. In the package repositories, you have to spend a lot of time grabbing PPAs and up-to-date packages to get the latest, greatest versions of everything. So you can tell I'm steering you away from Ubuntu-based stuff, so that would kill Linux Mint and stuff like that. Although those are great experiences for the user if you use a lot of the other stuff. Those are put together quite nicely. I've had really good success with Fedora. The latest versions, 34 and 35, I guess. 35 is the latest. We've actually done videos on 35, getting that one all ham radio ready. It's not very hard to kind of get it started and get stuff on there. And then, of course, we also have Arch-based systems. I'm using Garuda Linux here, but Endeavor OS would be another great one if you wanted to go with the Arch systems. Those are going to be very up-to-date kernels, very up-to-date packages. The ability to actually attach to GitHub repositories and build those as packages quite easy with the Arch user repository. A lot of people build right on top of the Git commits, so you can get literally the build that was just committed a few minutes ago into your system, which has been really good on for SDR++ if you follow that application. I've been using that for quite a while and was able to kind of test out some test radios that he's been putting in there on a daily basis when I have time to focus on it. But yeah, they're all really kind of good to get you started and going. I think our videos provide a little bit of guidance with that. If you want to just start with an empty operating system and kind of get to ham radio ready. But if you don't want to do that, yeah, Andy's Linux, our pre-build is probably good enough. The build a Pi if you're going to do a Pi build.
Very good. Well, I have an SDR play and an RTL SDR, and I've had fun with them in Windows, and everybody tells me it works good in Linux as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the SDR stuff works fabulous. There's a lot of tooling out there, too, for it. Some probably a little more complicated than necessary, but some of it gets really into some good details. And with multiple decoders running at once, you can do some amazing things, especially with a program called SDR Angel. That's one of the more robust packages that has just a little bit of everything in there to do everything from just regular decoding to, you know, DMR and stuff like that. It can do all kinds of fun stuff, as well as just the regular single sideband and, you know, all that good stuff.
Very good. And in terms of kits, there are a lot of kits for things like TNC hats for Raspberry Pis and things like that. And I've written about several of those. And so there's a lot of Linux and open source programming used in a lot of the kits that I've been working with.
Yeah, and that's a nice part about doing kit stuff, because generally the hardware is mostly open source, and the building instructions are, you know, crowdsourced. Everybody's, you know, giving their little fixes for this and that and, you know, stuff like that. I'm amazed at some of the projects that continue to, you know, have, if you adjust this capacitor by this, you can now do this. And, you know, it's pretty amazing, the whole kit building world.
All right. Very good. So, anything else? Any other topics that we can sort of expound upon, or anybody else have any interesting projects they're working on before Bill tackles one of those bland, boring topics we've got queued up? Come on, none of you people should be mic shy, right? You're all ham radio operators.
Well, not all of us.
Well, go ahead, Nate.
I was going to say there. If you're interested in running it on OpenSUSE, there's latest packages there. I maintain a wiki page on installing some of the common applications for a ham radio.
Oh, that's right. Tumbleweed, right?
Wow, OpenSUSE. It's been a while. Honestly, I think the last time I ran SUSE, it was SUSE. it wasn't the OpenSUSE version. So, ham radio portal link in the show notes, or not show notes.
And for what it's worth, there is a link to your podcast homepage as well, because I thought that'd be appropriate.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that very much. I'm going to have to check this out. I'm going to go look. Where's my link?
I remember us talking about that before.
Yeah,
you asked us about, like, what packages should we make sure that are there and stuff like that. And I think I pointed you to starting with the PureBlend, a list of packages, and then adding on some extra stuff that Debian has. You know, the only sad part about the PureBlend stuff is it's just woefully dated on some of the packages.
Yeah, that's the case with any kind of Debian variant, though, because they're not rolling releases, so you're going to have some backlog when it comes to package updates and things like that. It's a bit unfortunate, but of course you always have the ability to do other things, like, you know, do snaps or build from source or anything like that to get you more current, but it doesn't give you the advantages that the distros like Arch do, which can definitely get you on the bleeding edge. Of course, being on the bleeding edge can cause some bleeding, you know.
That blood comes from, you know.
Right.
Sometimes that update might be a little bit more than you asked for. If you're an Arch system, don't run automatic updates. But do check regularly. I know there's been a few times where, especially when WirePlumber was coming out to address some of the issues that the early PipeWire adopters were running into. The build for that kind of broke stuff. And you had to wait, in Archland, you had to wait a day and they fixed the package repository, the software center, whatever, to update nicely. when Wire Plumber came out, but when it first came out, it was a little disastrous for some people. But that's the nice part about Fedora, is that the Fedora has the updated packages, but they do just an extra level of curation and testing. And you may be waiting a week or two for some packages that are actually maintained well in the system. But in general, Fedora is pretty current versus Ubuntu, that's for sure. What were you going to say, Nate?
I was going to say that there's an old statement. Well, I don't know how old it is, but if you stay on the cutting edge of technology, you're going to bleed to death.
Yeah, eventually, right?
Yeah. But some people like hanging themselves right out there on the edge, for sure. I'm not that guy.
Those people are valuable.
Absolutely.
They test things, they break things, and they make it so it's a little better for us.
That's right. They do the hard work so we don't have to. All right. Anything else we want to cover? This has been really good so far.
Something? Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, go for it, Scott.
Was I live or something?
No. Yeah, you blinked.
Oh no, sorry. I think I just hit the wrong button. But you know, you're all hitting on stuff that I've been working on, as I've talked about with Russ in the past, and I think even on the show. I live in a pretty controlled neighborhood, and so I've been trying to figure out how to get running constantly. And the last year, I've actually done quite a bit with just a Pi and the KM4ACK build a Pi. I can't speak highly enough of that. It's not exactly a distro. It's more of a script that you run that downloads and configures everything you need to go. But as far as a POTA or Parks on the Air or Summits on the Air portable digital system, I'll tell you what, that is the best little system I think I've had in a long time. And it accomplishes the goal that I've been doing for the past, what, Russ, 8 years, trying to get a stable system for digital modes on the air on a Pi. So I think it does really well, and the current Pi 4s are more than enough horsepower to run it, although you do have to do a little bit of trickery with JTDX, for example, to get that running well if the bands get crowded. but yeah, that it's amazing what you can do nowadays with Linux and a Raspberry Pi computer the size of a credit card, isn't it?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I know the Pi 4 is really good until you get too many decodes in the same sequence, and then you got to start turning off that decode sensitivity. So don't do the double decode, or don't do the deep decode. Just do a shallow decode. Give me all the high powered stations, and we'll work with those first. That way,
well, yeah,
Pi doesn't exactly go.
And one of the things I've been doing is the auto filter on JTDX is very useful when you get into an actual QSO to limit it to the 100 or 200 kilohertz, 100 or 200 hertz right around your immediate receive point, and that really does free up your CPU cycles.
Yeah, yep, you don't want to start up too late after decoding to transmit.
So. Right.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. I haven't messed with that JTDX version of, I guess, WSJTX core.
I assume WSJTX can narrow your receive window as well. It's not something I've ever done, but I'm pretty sure it can.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I say, I've kind of settled on JTDX rather than the core WSJTX.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience with JTDX. I'm actually using WSJTZ right now. For no particular reason other than somebody said, hey, you should try this, and I did.
Oh, and, the AutoMagic version, right?
Yeah, the AutoMagic version, which I haven't actually used any of the features of, but it works and looks exactly the same as WSJTX. So it hasn't hindered me in any way from doing FT8 or any of the other modes. You know what? I need to switch. My grids are actually getting pretty full. I just need to switch over to like FT4 or something, try something a little different, fill up some more maps.
Getting too many awards on FT8, huh?
Well, I haven't applied for any of those, but, you know, such a lazy mode because I sit here at work all day and then I'm just like, you know, click the button over there. It's like, yep, respond to that, you know, and every hour I've got like 7 QSOs logged, which I haven't actually participated in, but,
could be worse. You could turn it on auto magic mode and you'd have like 150 contacts a day that you don't even remember doing.
Well, that's true.
That's why I have that script that does that for me, but I haven't run that since I proved that it's possible. So it's like, yeah, this is not fun.
My wife makes fun of me. She calls FT8 the Pokemon of amateur radio. It's just like a video game. You just got to collect them all.
Yeah.
Yes. That's rather apt. All right. Anything else? This is going really good. Guys are coming up with some great stuff to talk about, and you haven't asked us any personal questions too, which I'm definitely thumbs up on. So,
what's your favorite color?
It's too personal.
It's not too
bank
personal.
Passer, damn it!
I don't actually have an answer. I think it's changed actually over the years. When I was young, I could definitively say I could cross the bridge and answer the bridge keeper that my favorite color was red. Absolutely. But I think over time it's become blue. So,
well, most kids do say red.
Oh well, there you go. I'm just like most kids, or I was. Most
fire
kids,
trucks. Whiskey.
See, I was raised in Michigan, and it's never red up there.
Well, my room, my bedroom was like, if you walked into it, you would say, "Wow, that's a lot of red." So, cause like the carpet was red, the walls were like red, white, and blue. It was decorated in a lot of red things. Yeah. It was very red, but if you came to my house now, you would see very little red. So it's interesting.
I like the color green, like Open Sousa green.
It's bleeding. Oh, green.
I like green too. Like the color of money green, you know,
the color of our logo, our website.
Yeah, the website is pretty green. Yeah. It's the only reason the website tends toward the sort of green and gold is because when I had the logo commissioned, that's the color it came to me in. I didn't give color specifications and what I got was green. So therefore things became green.
I like the logo in green and kind of a goldy yellow.
Yeah, the green and gold is a nice combination. It's a good combination for anything, actually. But like I said, when I talked to Len about it, I gave him no color specifications. I said it needs to have a penguin that has headphones. And right. We got what we got. So he was the one who created the green.
It works. Yeah, now mostly our house is in blue. Because of the blue cow underground.
Yeah, and it would definitely tend toward the blue these days. Even my guitar that I bought is blue, and it has blue strings on it. So nothing red.
Yeah, I was just saying my college colors were gold and green.
Yeah, green and gold. Actually, the colors of the local high school team here is green and white. So I mean, it's
well here in Nebraska, it's all go big red.
Go big red.
Yeah, it's like all the red states, right?
Yeah, Husker red.
All right. Any other like personal questions? I mean, what's your favorite color? Is not really deeply right, personal.
How much have you spent on antennas? Would you say, or rigs?
$4.
And then don't tell my wife.
I don't even want to say.
See, for me, I have well. Here's the thing. Bill will appreciate this. When it comes to HF antennas, I have spent, I don't remember what I paid for the HF antenna that I bought. I use an Alpha Delta DXCC, which is an 80-10 trap dipole. It's the only HF antenna I've ever bought. I still use it today. I probably paid something like $200 for it, and it's all the money I've ever spent on HF antennas. For VHF antennas, I have one dual band vertical that is a Comet, and I probably spent $150 on it, and that's really all I spent on antennas. Now mobile antennas, every time I go to a ham fest, I buy at least two
because he breaks
them. Yeah, because either it breaks or it vanishes or it like something happens to it or something like that. So so as far as mobile antennas, I've spent a crap ton of money. But as far as what's on my house, I've spent very little.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of money on antennas over the years. Now I've gotten a lot of free antennas over the years as well. I've probably got more free antennas than ones I've bought, but like I have ham sticks for every band but 160, and I also have duplicates. So I have like, you know, two ham sticks for every band, basically, because I have the dipole kit that I bought years ago as well. I'm staring at a free antenna I got right above my desk here. That's a Gap, as the not the Challenger DX, which I have owned one of those at one time. It's the Voyager DX.
Voyager, yeah.
Yeah, I have the Voyager DX sitting right above my my recording station up on the wall, ready to go out and replace the butternut in the backyard that I picked up from a ham here in town for a couple hundred bucks. I have a few commercial dipoles that I bought. I have a mag loop that I bought. Many VHF antennas over the years. I still have a Cushcraft boomer in the side yard that has not been hooked up since the 90s, but somehow has followed me to all of my houses. It's currently living in Montana inside outside in the snow right now. I have built a lot of antennas. So I've spent money on components on antennas. The best investment to the antenna purchasing and building has been the analyzer that I've had. I have one of the MFJ old original ones that go up to 2 meters, I think. So it's that version 259B or something like that. Had that for about 20 years or so now. Radios. Yeah, I have a lot of radios. They're all HF mostly, though. Yeah. I have two ICOM IC703s that I bought. One I bought because we used it the National Scout Jamboree about 4 or 5 years ago. We used it to activate Green Mountain there on the camp area, whatever you want to call it, at the summit. So we did a soda activation. First time that was activated up there. So I have the radio that was used, including the backpack and everything else. And then I also have my 703 that I've had for many years. I love the 703. And I'd probably buy another one if I saw one for sale, just because I really like the radio. It has a hot receiver, and the punch that the compressor gives for doing voice contacts on QRP is uncomparable. In the QRP world, most people think I'm lying when I'm QRP and I'm going into a vertical. So it's not like I'm putting out that big a signal, but yeah, I do have an HF radio that I got for free. I spent $20 on raffle tickets at the Bozeman Hamfest, and I got a FT450D for free. Well, $20, something like that. I have the Kenwood TR-851 751 twins. Had the 751 since the 90s as well. Made many contacts. Worked the 97 VHF sweepstakes as a rover with that rig. I got bricks for that as well. I got probably, I don't know, 6, 7 2 meter VHF rigs or 2 meter FM rigs. They're in boxes. Yeah, I have a lot of stuff. I don't get rid of anything. That's the unfortunate thing. And I guess, I have that Alinco DX70TH as well. That was actually the first HF rig I bought brand new. I had a Heath kit, 104, SB104A. Yeah, SB104A, the one with the red digital readouts, as my first HF rig when I started. So, yeah.
That's cool.
I've gone through quite a bit of equipment, I guess, 27 years in the hobby, so...
I have sort of the opposite experience. I've had a TS-570D forever that is still like my workhorse radio, and I finally decided I wanted something that had 6 meters in it. I used Bill's DX-70TH for a while, decided that I kind of wanted something a little more permanent on 6 meters, so picked up an IC-7100, and those are the only two HF rigs I have. I've got all kinds of handy-talkies and stuff like that, although they tend toward Yaesu. For mobiles and handhelds, but because of system fusion. But between the IC7100, which I can't recommend enough, and the Kenwood TS570D, which is a total workhorse and will be around long after the apocalypse, both great radios.
Well, for me, it's where do I begin? Because I have just a pile of kit radios that I built over the years. Lots and lots of QRP kit radios that I've built and written about. But the main rig is a 7610 ICOM. And I also have a 7300 and a 9700. And I have an SB200 that I did a three-part series about in CQ where I did the Harbach kits on it. So it has all new power supply and inrush protection and change the relay voltage and replace the tubes and replace the chokes and all that. And so it gets me 600 watts out if I need it. And I have Elecraft KX 1, 2, and 3. Now, the 1 was quite a challenge to build because it's very tightly packed in there, especially if you do the internal tuner portion of it. Now, of course, you can't get the KX 1 anymore.
I have one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they're great to hang
on. With the tuner, yeah.
Yeah, they're great to hang on to. It's a wonderful, wonderful radio.
I hear they're kind of clicky, though. When you get close in, so if you have a bunch of guys that you're doing a soda activation with, if you have a guy with a KX1, you want to kick him off the mountain.
That I don't know. I'll have to look into that. As far as antennas go, if you look at the January 2021 issue of CQ Magazine, my antenna refurbishment project is on the front cover. And I basically stripped the tower clean and started over. A year ago, and the original TH3 Junior, which was still one that came from the factory here in Lincoln before they sold it to MFJ, now has been replaced with the full TH3, and I have a three-element Cushcraft for 6, and then 6 elements on UHF as far as the beams go, and I have a disc cone that I use for kind of general work on VHF, UHF, and I've got wires. I'm only on a 55 by 110 foot lot, and I only have the back half of that for wires, but yet I have top fed half wave shortened slopers for 160 and 80, and these are the W8AMZ antennas, which are now sold. I don't know by who now since he passed away, but same design is now still being sold. And then the other wires are all radio waves antennas. I have a 17 meter and 40 meter double bazooka. And then I have a 12 meter dipole as well. And the goal being that somebody asked me, they need Nebraska on this mode or that mode, and I'm the only one they happen to know that lives in Nebraska. And so I get called upon. The only band that I really don't have any dedicated antenna is 30, and I already actually have that. I just haven't hung it yet, and it's a 30-meter double bazooka as well. And I don't have anything for 60, so I just kind of tune the 80-meter antenna for that. But also a plethora of 2-meter 440 HTs and so forth. And like you, Russ, I lean towards the Fusion, and I have an FT3 and a FTM400.
Yeah, I have a 300 and a 100. And the 7, what's the... There's a 2-meter ICOM that has a front speaker and just a LCD display on it for mobile. It does Fusion as well. Have that in one car. And we have two FT3s. So, yeah, I just kind of locked onto the System Fusion. I've got enough equipment here to do everything, whether it's D-Star, Fusion, DMR, whatever. But I just kind of been a fan of the way Yaesu's gone. And even though they're support was kind of lacking during the height of the COVID period, still sort of favored them. And I actually have a DR1X here too that I use for Fusion. It's really only for me right now, so I have a repeater all to myself. But that's going to be part of the AF0SS here before, you know, I get too old, I hope. Basically, when I get enough money to put up to get a diplexer and an antenna, then we'll actually put it on the air. But yeah, I do like the Fusion route. So
yeah, I have a lot of kit radios, like I said, that I built over the years, and like the Nouveau 75, which is the Forced 8 QRP Group's 75 meter AM transceiver. And let's see, I've got a Weber tri-bander, which is a three-band CW transceiver. And these are just ones that I'm looking at in front of me. The Cricket, which is kind of fun. If you think of a Pixie, but instead of having a rotten receiver, you put a really good receiver in it. And instead of having to wind toroids, they are spiral wound on the board. If you go to 4sqrp.com, these things run on a 9-volt battery, and you get like within plus or minus a couple hundredths of a watt. You're right at 1 watt of output on CW, and the straight key is part of the kit, and it's crystal controlled, but and no volume control or anything. You just turn it on and plug the headset in and plug the antenna in, and what frequency crystal you got in it, that's where you are. And it actually has a really good receiver. The 80 meter version gets real close to where the ARL runs their CW bulletins, and several times I've listened to them on it and the signal was kind of weak. It was, you know, so I plugged in my KX2 into the same line just to see, and I'll be darned if it wasn't about an S1, S2 signal. So it does really good with QRP-type weak signals. And it's not a bad kit to put together. It's not a huge parts count thing. And like I said, you don't wind any toroids, but it's called the Cricket. And there's versions for 40 and 30 and 80. But there's a new version coming out for 20 very shortly.
That sounds good. That would work for me, because I think I'm the only Luddite around here that actually uses a straight key. All these other guys are real fancy with their iambic keyers and everything. But
see, in my head, I'm imagining that you have these giant OE254 style antennas coming off of your house.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you go up by Joe's, he probably looks like the Harp Array, but around here, it's pretty Spartan.
Yeah, well, it mostly comes off of one tower. And, but yeah, if you look at my fences around the backyard, you'll see lots of places where there are ropes tied to it, and the remnants of an old swing set that now has a rope or two on that as well. Couldn't pull it out of the ground, so it's now a wire rope anchor.
That's well, we want to say thanks to N8VSI Scott and W5AJQ Jonathan, who had to run off, but want to acknowledge their participation in our show. So thanks to them. And go ahead, Nate.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just have this little Bofang radio. I only listen, although it was broken for a while, and I did, it wasn't that broken, actually, just the battery just blew up in it. But anyway, it's cleaned up. I got a new battery in it, and I just listen. That's all I really do at this point. Speaking about... I've been again for the ham exam. Things kind of got screwed up last year. I think you probably are familiar, and so I didn't actually get the do the whole test thing.
Well, if you like to listen, you definitely want to go ahead and invest. What $29 now? You just bought one, right, Russ? On RTLSDR.com, RTLSDR. They're amazing and fun and cheap, super cheap, and you can listen to HF all the way through, you know, VHF and UHF and everything else. Yep. If you like to listen, then you can play around with SDR Plus. Yeah, you can start test, play around with SDR Plus and all those other applications inside of your SUSE install.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Well, this has been quite a good conversation. We probably should start winding down now because we have people who are like, you know, dropping off already. So I know we're getting kind of long and late, and we don't want to just sort of drag this on into infinity, but definitely thank everybody for being here. We haven't heard much from Hutch or from Don, so we might have to throw them under the bus here and see if they want to say anything about anything. So we can start with Don. What do you got going? You got any questions for us before we run on? I know you're around a lot and you sort of interact when you want to, but how's it been going for you, and what do you want to contribute to our wrap up for 2021?
I don't have a whole lot. I've been pretty much focused on learning the Morse for the last year, so I've been doing that sometimes 3 or 4 times a week, and still struggling with it. Joe would be happy that literally in the last 4 days, I think I've finished 2 different kits, all of them centered around doing CW, and I don't have too much, and for Nate's like edification, I'm the complete opposite of what everybody else has. I've got one HF wire antenna that half the time when I'm trying to verify that it's still up, I've got to like look around at the trees and like, is it actually still out there and is it still up? Cause it just blends right in. And then I just have a 3-band vertical for 6 meters, 2 meters and 70 centimeters. So, very, very sparse, setup on the side, but, the RTL SDR lets you play around with like decoding FT8 and the other digital modes.
What kits did you build?
Well, I finally finished my QCX Mini. Word to the wise, don't rush. And when it says to put it on the top of the board, put it on the top of the board, because otherwise you will destroy the board. And then you have to order it again for like half the cost of the kit just to get the tiny little control board from Turkey again. I started that one a long time ago and finally got all of the stuff. So I made that's a 20 meter QCX Mini. And then I put together, finished actually just before I got on, a Morris Tutor, kit that, some of the guys from, or I think it's just one of the guys on the ham radio workbench had been putting together, but it is a design by another, it's a US ham. I'm going to blank on his call sign. It's like W5 something or other.
Well, the QCX Mini is wonderful. I recently built the 40 meter version of that, and I'm going to do a 20.
Yeah. I went kind of crazy. I have, so the Morse Tutor is actually by W8BH. See, I got it all wrong other than the W. The QCX, yeah, it was actually kind of, it was fun. I was almost done because the control board is one of the last things that you do. And I just wasn't paying attention and threw, it's like a 2x3 header. In a stack of, and another, and an extra stack of PCB, and I put it on the wrong side, and trying to get that to come apart was not very fun. I probably should have just cut the header up and tried pulling it out that way, but I didn't think of it until I ruined the PCB. But that was like the first winding the tri-toroid, which sounds scary, but the way that Hans writes the instructions, I mean, it worked very well, and he gives you his instructions are amazing. They were, so it went together fine. I actually have the 50 watt amplifier kit also, and then I actually bought another 20 and a 40 meter one, but I think I'm actually just gonna offer those up for sale because I'm not looking to do another one.
Yeah, well, I'm looking to get the 20 meter mini with the case.
Well, I have all of that here. If you want, hit me up later and I can, we can talk about it.
Sounds good. But yeah, the it's really a high quality receiver. I was amazed at how much of the alignment is all in the firmware. Just amazing.
Yeah, that was one of, it was one of those things where I think the last big kit that I put together was a Ramsey Electronics fox hunting or radio direction finding kit way back in the 90s when I was obviously much younger. So like, it's amazing as like what you can do now in such a tiny little thing. And I really put it together. Like, the reason why I bought it was, one, right, it's a nice tiny little, you know, maybe about the size of a deck and a half of cards. And it's pretty light, but the big draw for me was the Morse code, the decoder and the keyer that's in it. Since it was much simpler to carry that around than either my, IC7100 or, well, that's really the only other, radio that I have that does CW that I can move around.
All right. Very cool. So we have one other participant tonight who hasn't said much of anything, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Hutch, but is there anything you want to tell us about, anything that's going on? Or you can just say, no, I've been sitting here listening and bringing my dog to downtown Gosport, and that's sort of the sum total of my life.
Well, yeah, I'm doing that, but also as far as radios go, I've got an IC. Well, I had an IC 760, ICOM 760, and I love that radio, but it's the size of a house. And I've been trying to downsize lately, so I just sold that. And, you know, trying to streamline my ham shack a little bit, and I'm thinking about maybe building a kit, putting something together, something a little bit smaller, something I can carry around with me. And as far as antennas, I just throw up a dipole. I've got all this wire. I've got 5 acres of land and a bunch of trees, so I usually just throw some wire up in the trees, and it works great. As far as other things, I've been brushing up on my Spanish and also brushing up on some computer programming, so that's about all I've been up to, and also just listening to your podcast, and that's about it.
Well, very good. Thank you for listening to the podcast. So you've been on the air lately? I mean, I'm pretty much just focusing on FT8 because I'm kind of doing that while I'm working, as I've been saying. But have you been actually on the air doing something? And what are you working these days? Oh, that was for you, Hutch. Did you drop out? Did you lose your Wi-Fi?
Oh, am I there now?
Oh, yeah, here you.
Okay, yeah. I sold the 760. I've got some Chinese handy talkies, and I'm not really doing too much presently. I'm just trying to downsize right now and get some things straightened out. And then I'm looking at building maybe a kit, something QRP, something small that I can carry around with me.
Yeah, very good. Well, hopefully we'll hear from you on the air at some point, whether it's digital voice over the internet or something, or maybe even HF once you get some of that long wire stuff sorted out in your backyard trees or whatever. But thanks for being here tonight. It's good to hear from you. Really good. I see you've been active on Facebook, and tell you what, you've got some talent there. I've been looking at some of your drawings and stuff, and pretty impressive.
Well, thank you very much. I have my background is in art, liberal arts, and also I have my a degree in computer science, so I'm kind of like all over the place.
Well, that's okay. I think we all are in some respect. So we know Ted's only listening, and honestly, I think we've got enough content here to consider this a really good wrap-up of 2021. We've heard from lots of people and lots of listeners, and we appreciate everybody being here. And thanks to all for participating in the show here and giving us some content as we go into the winter break, if you want to call it, the holiday break, whatever it is that we do here over the next 3 weeks before we come back and record again. But before we go, we should. I'll just run down the list, see if anybody has anything else to say before we wrap up, or just say your goodbyes and fare thee wells or whatever, and then we'll go ahead and let everybody go on and have a great holiday season. So we'll start at the top of the list, which is Nate up there, Cubicle Nate, who's I see doing some festive things with his Christmas lights. But we'll let you go ahead and say a final thought if you got one, and then we'll move on.
Hey, thanks for not kicking me out of your group. Since I've been pretty quiet last year, maybe two, and I do enjoy the show. I've been listening, you know, on and off, and a lot lately. So I appreciate the show. I enjoy it. I learn something all the time, and I'm having a hard time actually keeping that stuff cemented in the head. But I'll be there eventually.
Well, fantastic! Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it. Hope you have a great holiday season. And Joe, anything final you want to say to wrap up?
Just thanks for allowing me in and getting me steered into Linux a little more. and keep up the great podcast. And you can catch me on Ham Nation and also sometimes Amateur Radio Roundtable and several other webcasts and podcasts.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thanks for being here. It's great to have you. And I know we've seen you at various ham fests over the years, but it's always nice to talk to you because we don't often get the chance necessarily at a ham fest. So thanks for coming here. Hope you have a great holiday season. And Tony, we're going to make you unmute. See if there's anything else you want to say before we wrap up here. Or maybe he's not. Maybe he's just going to ignore us and be that way. Maybe.
Yeah. He unmuted.
He unmuted. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, maybe there. I don't know. Yeah,
there we go. There we go.
Yeah, I switched to the phone. A little different.
Let's get any parting thoughts, Tony?
Nope. Got to hold the button.
I am holding the button.
Nope, there he went.
He held the button until he disappeared. So. All right, we'll come back to Tony if we get a second. But we're back down to Hutch, actually. So any final parting thoughts, Hutch? Before we let you go,
yeah, thanks for a great podcast, and thanks for inviting me. It's always fun, and everyone have a safe and happy holiday season. This is Hutch K9KJN 73s.
Well, thank you very much for being here, and you do the same. Have a safe and happy holiday season, and hopefully we'll catch you in the new year sometime, maybe on or about Hamvention. Steve just showed up. He's probably figuring out how to unmute and work out his PTT. if he gets that done before we get to the bottom of the list, we'll let him get in here. That's K7HVT. Otherwise, we'll just let him be a listener for the show. Don, KB2YSI, thanks for being here. Got anything you want to say by way of wrapping up and saying goodnight?
Yeah, everyone have a great holiday and hope you stay safe. Yet, man, just even the weather seems kind of crazy all over the place. So everyone stay safe and catch you around. Usually in the chat here in the server during the day. So if you're ever looking for either a good time or a not good time, stop by. We're usually here and we'll shoot the breeze with you. 7-3, everyone.
All right. Fantastic. And we'll just go ahead and say thanks for Ted coming on to listen, not be a voice on the show, but that's all right. And thanks for being a contributor to the open source community and providing all those applications that people can use that show up in the Linux distros and being a good steward of the open source philosophy. We appreciate that. And Steve K7HVT just says he's going to be SWL tonight. So thanks, Steve, for showing up, even though you sort of got here late. I don't know if you're listening to the live stream or not, but if you got here just now, we're kind of done. But before we go, we should let Cheryl say a few words if she wants to, by way of wrapping up, or because she's been really quiet. I don't know, maybe surfing Facebook or something. But anything you want to say by way of closing or saying
no? Goodbye? I hope everybody has a happy holiday. And I need to let Rich know, since he slept through the podcast, that his rum recipe will be in the show notes. So. Or his rum cake recipe, so because right. he requested a rum cake recipe this time, so
all right. I didn't know there were going to be show notes, but I guess there are. So.
Well, either that or I could run through the rum cake recipe real quick. It's one or the other.
Well, hey, why not? Go for it.
Okay, so Rich K0EB actually said he wanted to see a rum cake. So my rum cake recipe is a box of yellow cake mix, a package of instant vanilla pudding, 4 eggs, a half cup of water, a half cup of vegetable oil, a half cup of rum, dark or light is good, dark is better though, a cup of chopped pecans, and some brown sugar. And for the glaze, you need 1.5 sticks of butter, a quarter cup of water, 1.5 cups of granulated sugar, and 3/4 of a cup of rum, preheat your oven to 325, grease and flour bundt pan. You can choose, or you can cheat and use Baker's Joy pan spray if you like. Sprinkle the nuts over the bottom of the pan. Sprinkle some brown sugar over the top of the nuts. Kind of caramelizes. Mix all your cake ingredients together. Pour that into the pan. Smooth out the top until it's all nice and even. Bake for about an hour, or a little less if your pan interior is black. For the glaze, Mix together the butter and the water in the saucepan. Bring it to a boil. Turn it off, or add your sugar in there too, excuse me. Turn it off, add the rum, stir to combine it, reheat for about 30 seconds. Remove the cake from the oven. Drizzle the glaze on the bottom of the cake. Allow it to sit for a few minutes, then take it out of the pan, invert it onto a plate. Thoroughly and gently prick the surface of the cake with a fork. Slowly drizzle the remaining rum glaze all over the top of the cake, allowing it to drip down the sides. And cool that to room temperature before you eat it to make sure everything is soaked in. So, and that's a wonderful rum cake for everybody to have on Christmas. So,
it sounds good. Are we having rum cake on Christmas?
I guess I can bake one and take it to St. Louis.
Well, it sounds like fun.
Okay.
All right. Anything else you want to say before we get to Bill to wrap up?
No, I'm done. So all up to Bill now.
So. All right. Oh, no. So Bill, we'll let you wrap up before I close the show.
Yeah. This has been a fun another year here at Linux in the Ham Shack, and looking forward to a nice restful holiday season and getting ready to pack our bags for a few months out of country. So, we'll be doing the podcast more remote than normal, a few thousand miles. But it's been an interesting year for ham radio and Linux all around, and it just keeps getting better revision by revision. So looking forward to next year and all the new stuff and new kernels and new interesting twists that we see with Fedora, GNOME, and KDE, and everything else with the way things are progressing out there. So should be an interesting 2022.
All right, very good. Well, thanks once again to everybody who participated in the show tonight. Nate, Hutch, Steve, Don, Ted, Scott, Jonathan, and Joe. We really appreciate you being here and contributing to the program. It's been a wild and crazy 2021, but the show has been good. We've enjoyed the feedback and all of the things we've heard from our listeners. We hope we've been entertaining and at least mildly educational over 2021. We certainly look to do more of that in 2022. We're going to take about a 3-week break here. We'll be back on recording live on the 6th of January. And as Bill says, he's going to be out of country starting at the end of January, but we will still be recording the show. He'll still be a part of it. He just may be up later than the rest of us for a while. but we'll still be doing the thing. Hopefully long into the future. We hope everybody has a fantastic holiday season, a great rest of 2021. And we hope that your new year in the beginning of 2022 is as good as it can possibly be. And we hope you stick around and continue to be listeners as we move through the next phase in the next year. And I appreciate you once again. Have a great holidays, and we'll talk to you all real, real soon. This has been episode number 445 of Linux in the Ham Shack, our 2021 year in review, if you will. And we hope to get you all soon. I'm Ross, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.